Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
All right. Well, hey. It's been a while. Hey, nice to hear you.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we've been on a mini hiatus that needed to be done for different purposes, but we're back. And for, obviously, this month, our theme is reaping balance. And technically, our first show was a rebroadcast of Lammas, but our show live is Demeter, goddess of the harvest, and we will be diving into that in a little bit, but, you know, we're going to catch up with each other on air with the what's happened in our last few weeks, and basically, I will start, and then I'm going to hand it over to you, because you've got a lot of stuff that happened, and I basically, it was, you know, a standard few weeks of clients and different things going on around my living area, people in the different areas. I live in a environment that has a small tract of homes. It's more seniors. So as one would expect, we've had a couple of deaths since this whole time frame where we've been off air started, and all the intriguing and things about that. And, you know, the weather has been unbearably hot and humid here, and that's been, you know, kind of an issue just to make sure you stay hydrated and all. But the exciting part was that my daughter and her husband and some of his family members who have family members wound up going to Alaska for a week and, being able to go up there. I did not. I was here. But there were, you know, a lot of things that she shared when she got back. I got a piece of a bone, a whale bone, actually, and a sliver of an iceberg. It's a petrified iceberg. So I have those two little things on my altar. And so that was kind of, you know, a nice little gift. And, you know, I think we're now all in the throes of getting ready to have my granddaughter go back to elementary school, where she will, you know, be going next week, actually. And so there's all these different things that need to get done. So I'm kind of on the periphery right now. And, you know, sometimes it's frustrating, but get all the pieces and find out when the orientation meeting is, because I need to be there so that the teacher knows who I am, because I'm one of the people that picks her up and engages. So I need to make sure they know that, you know, I'm legit, because they have a lot of security that they make sure that, you know, run through the different, you know, things. So, but other than that, it's been pretty mellow. Some things have been going on, but I think I'm going to turn it over to you and let you say what's been going on with you.
Well, I think it's very cool that we are coming back together again after a couple of weeks off on the peak of the Lionsgate portal. And that's kind of a very interesting thing that happens annually during the season of Leo, where the Earth and the star Sirius and Orion are all in alignment. And this is said to be opening a very powerful energy portal that can be used for spiritual healing and manifesting. And a lot of people describe getting a lot of, you know, psychic uploads or downloads, maybe uploads too. But but it's like a shift, an energy shift that it gives you like a chance to kind of amplify your intentions and align your spirit and bring, you know, some of your desired reality to fruition. And so that's kind of a neat thing that's going on. But lately, I've been healing up quite nicely from some very needed dental surgery. So I'm happy about that because it's not my favorite thing. Over here, we recently celebrated my youngest daughter's birthday. And I gave her... I'm not sure if these are her first decks, but maybe they are. I gave her my favorite tarot deck and my favorite oracle deck. So I gave her, my favorite tarot deck is the Weiser Tarot, that W-E-I-S-E-R tarot. And I gave her also the Rebel Oracle deck and the Oracle with an Attitude deck. And I really, she was very excited about those. And so I was really, really happy. I don't know if you've ever looked at the Rebel deck at all, Elvira.
Actually, they have it at a local store. And since I go in there a lot, I have seen it, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty snarky. And, you know, I just like the card that I picked up just now, it says, on one side it says, whatever you are thinking about, don't do it. And when you flip it over, it says, now is not the fucking time. And so that's kind of how most of the cards are, where they're just very, very to the point. And they're not a kind of a card that you can, well, I would generally not use them doing readings for clients. They're usually ones that I just call for myself.
right.
Although once in a while I'll have somebody that might have kind of that, you know, that certain sense of humor that would appreciate it. So then I'll pull it out. But and then last week I went to a Lamas ritual at our local metaphysical shop, Altered State of Mind. And I was able to, it was really cool to be able just to participate. Great ritual done by Crystal and Kyle. And it's like, as I'm getting older, I mean, for many years, I've been the one that was always putting on the ritual, kind of, you know, doing all the preparation, helping the other people that were participating and just getting, you know, all of that together. And so it's really nice at this time just to be able to go and be one of the participants. So well done, Crystal and Kyle. I really appreciated that. And then this past weekend was the dark moon. And I did, I'll just say real quick, I did a little mini Depnon ritual to Hecate. And I did it in my backyard because I'm usually up in the woods, but not lately. And it was so crazy. A crazy amount of dogs suddenly started barking all at once.
Wow.
When I was at that one point in the ritual, and I was just like, yes, you're here. I hear you. Yeah. So
wow.
That's, you know, otherwise, you know, just doing a bit of client work here and there, doing readings and, healing up and just.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, definitely a intense time frame for, you know, the mouth. I know, and I've had dental work, not the kind that you did, but something similar. Mm-hmm. And it definitely, you know, took a toll on me to engage externally, you know, because it's your mouth. You do a lot of talking. So if it's sore or you're trying to deal with, you know, any kind of, you know, excessive, you know, mucus, blood, or otherwise, you know, it's not something you want to be out in the world with, you know?
that drooling thing usually doesn't go over so well.
really. So, I mean, considering how we, you know, look at things, it's like either you're drooling and there's a problem with you, or you look like maybe you're drooling, you know, blood, and they think you're a vampire. I mean, they're going, it's not time for that yet.
Right.
So, but I understand that. So, well, you know, it kind of, I know it's, there's no real easy segue from drooling and blood and healing up mouth to Demeter, but we're kind of going to go there anyway. And since obviously this is, you know, we're dealing with Demeter, the goddess of the harvest, and also, dealing with, you know, what her mythology is, where, you know, some of the backstory of her, and then, you know, moving on to, you know, because all this is part of being a mother image, and she is, you know, obviously the mother of agriculture and grain harvest and, you know, the earth, and there's all these things that bring about the aspects of growth, mothering, nurturing, you know, that kind of a thing. And then, you know, because she has her own, you know, she has a few children, but the one that is the firstborn child is Persephone. And of course, with that, there is obviously the whole experience of, you know, the abduction of Persephone. And we will, you know, kind of, we'll work through all that. We've got a lot of things to say. And then come our second half, we've got, kind of a version of looking at it in a more modern day process, I would say. But for the moment, the mythology of Demeter is obviously she is, you know, a harvest goddess. She's obviously the sister of Zeus. And in the process, Zeus, of course, had, you know, relations, and that's where Persephone came from. And then there is, you know, a couple of other people that, you know, the gentleman, and she had a love affair, a very intense love affair with, and I never know how, he's a Titan, and his name is Eocyon, or Eocyon, and she was very much in love with him. And unfortunately, Zeus got jealous, and he killed him. So, but she did have a son, and his name was Pintus. And then eventually, again, poor Demeter, she gets the eye given by Poseidon. And unfortunately, you know, she, of course, changes to a horse to run away. He changes into a stallion. He gets her. And, of course, she bears a son called, and again, I apologize, Arianne. And so, you know, she does have, you know, some other children, but she basically taught the humans how to plant and plow and nurture the earth to produce food. So she, you know, very much part of that nurturing aspect. And she also was, she taught agriculture. And again, this is another Triptolemus. And, you know, upon that, spreading the wisdom of that and, you know, going on to the illusion mysteries. There is, you know, there are a couple of other things that she did out of her journey of, you know, the circumstances. The illusion mysteries were taught, which is a very sacred set of mysteries. And it's basically life and, you know, death and rebirth. It's a cycle Interesting mm-hmm. enough, I did not know all the things. She has several animals. She has the pig, the serpent. Mm-hmm. There's a cute story I'm going to ask you to tell about the gecko. Turtle dove, crane, and screech owl. And I thought mm-hmm. that was interesting, all
oh,
of the different
interesting.
Things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the cornucopia, I guess, you know, the abundance of mm-hmm. that with the torch, part of, you know, the quest of using the torch of Hecate to try to locate her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the poppy and the wheat shaft. And so, you know, and then, of course, you have the symbol of her chariot pulled by, mm-hmm. Drawn by two serpents and, you know, the winged serpents. And so she definitely has some very interesting iconography that is part of her history and her powers. And I think I'm going to, you know, turn it over to you to give a little bit more in-depth of information. So go ahead and see what more we can pull out of this, Deb.
Yeah, So with Demeter, I think that I might repeat a little of what you talked about, just because as I talk about her journey, some of those things happened
mm-hmm.
during the course of that time. And so so we know that her brother Zeus, by him, she became the mother of Persephone, and that, you know, was one of the most notable Homeric hymns, which the hymn to Demeter, which details the story of Persephone's abduction by Hades and Demeter's search for her. And so I think it's like within this story where we see how the mythology of the goddesses, Demeter, Persephone, and Hecate, become very inextricably allied and entwined, where I can see, you know, that as a form of them as women, you know, goddesses lifting each other up during mm-hmm. something that was, you know, like a huge challenge. And so I also kind of see like the story, or you could even say, call it like the passion of Demeter, like within the dynamics of her journey to find Persephone. And what I mean by passion here is like is the challenges or the suffering or the making your way through a dark night. And I think that that is how that's undertaken by someone. And the way that she went through things is kind of similar to like a hero's journey, although a lot of people probably don't think of Demeter's story as that so much. But I think for me, her story is really relatable to me as a mom and as a woman. And as even if I, because I was talking to a group of women last night, and even as an older woman without kids, like just relating and talking to someone who's a couple generations younger than me. And, you know, because I think that a lot of women, especially moms and older women, are made to feel kind of invisible in today's society, almost as much as in Demeter's. And so in this story, Persephone was abducted by Hades with Zeus's blessing, but not with Demeter's or with Persephone's knowledge or blessing. And so Demeter searched and searched for 9 days for her missing daughter, but could not find her until Hecate tells her that she heard the abduction, but does not know who took her. So while Demeter and Hecate continue to search for Persephone, they seek out the help of Helios, the sun god, who sees everything, and he tells them that Zeus gave Persephone to Hades, the ruler of the underworld. And also Helios suggests that, hey, maybe Hades might not be a bad match. And so at this point, I can imagine Demeter's outrage at Zeus upon this revelation. And also when the sun god Helios, you know, insinuates that Hades was a good match, I would think that at that point in time, that probably added insult to injury.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I just want, like, to look at a few of the events that happened, you know, within her journey. And so, well, this part I was almost going to skip over because it demonstrates there's a story of Demeter and Pelops, or Pelops. So her rage, you know, reverted to great sorrow. And it was during this time Demeter absentmindedly ate a piece of Pelops' shoulder at a banquet for the gods. So Pelops was some sort of a hero and a king and also the grandson of Zeus. But he must have pissed off his father or something because his dad, Tantalus, cooked him up and served him up to the gods. To test the gods. Yeah, right. In a stew. And so all of the gods knew that there was Pelops in the stew, except for Demeter. She ate his shoulder. So I guess they put them back together after that. But it's thought that Demeter was so depressed that she could not think straight. And she couldn't work. Mm-hmm. And so since the goddess wasn't providing food, soon no one would eat. Not even the gods, you know, because they would get, you know, tributes from the humans. And so famine ended up striking mankind. So then there, you mentioned Demeter and Poseidon. So then she's wandering in Arcadia, and her brother Poseidon tried to rape her, and then she saved herself by turning into a mirror. And so then, you know, he turned into a mirror too and raped her that way. So, you know, at that point, I would venture to guess that if she had ever given a thought to returning to live on Mount Olympus, that would have been like the clincher. It's like, no fucking way. So then, now, you know, then Demeter wandered the earth. And she wasn't like, I don't believe she was a heartless goddess. I think she was depressed, vengeful, not so much yet. But she did expect to be treated well, at least by mortals, even as she was in the guise of an old Cretan woman. So Demeter wandered the earth disguised as this old woman named Doss. And so then we come to the incident where gecko killing kind of delights Demeter. So when Demeter reached Attica, she was more than parched. She was given water to drink. She took the time to sate her thirst. And by the time she had stopped, an onlooker named Ascalibus was laughing at the gluttonous old woman. He said she didn't need a cup, but a tub to drink out of. And Demeter was so insulted. So she threw water at Ascalibus and turned him into a gecko.
I
kind of love that. Right here.
Because I love geckos, too. So.
Yeah. I used to have one. Their little feet stick onto the ceiling.
I know. But they're cute.
Yeah. Anyway, so then I'm going to quick go through this last part before we have to break. But so she finally arrives to the city of Eleusis, and she sat down by the well. She was crying. And there she met the daughters of the king, or the chieftain, Celius, who offered to help her find work as a nurse. So because they didn't recognize her in her disguise. And so they said their mother had this had just had a baby, and she would probably welcome Doss, as she was known, into her home. And so in exchange for the hospitality she'd been extended, Demeter wanted to do a service for the family. And so she set about to make the baby immortal by the usual immersion in fire and ambrosia technique. And it would have worked, too, if Metanira, the mom, hadn't spied on the old nurse one night when she suspended the ambrosia-anointed infant over the fire. So so the reason that she put him into the fire was not to burn him, but to burn away his mortal part. And she gave him ambrosia because that's the food of the gods. And so when the mom screamed, you know, Demeter took Demorphin out of the fire and informed her that she's, you know, and revealed her divinity and in all of her glory, you know, she transformed into her true form and became this vibrant, beautiful being, and the house became filled with brilliant light. And because the Eleusians were distraught at having angered the goddess. They wanted to please her, and Demeter instructed them to build a temple in her honor. And so that's where they established the mystery cult in the city. So she could teach her worshippers her special rites. And so, you know, and then after that, I believe she kind of just stayed at the temple there and refused to feed the earth, more because of being very depressed. She was unable to do her work as the goddess. And so, still refusing to return to Olympus and join the other gods, she was unable to, fulfill her role, and so that caused a drought and a results in famine, killing many of the mortals. And so that's the thing, when she did that, that made Zeus change, where he sent Hermes, or in some versions the Hecate, that found and rescued or brought back Persephone back up to the light. And Hades agreed to let her go, but we know the whole thing with, you know, if she ate anything, that she would still be bound to the underworld. And so I'm going to kind of stop there, because I know we're getting really close to our break time, because we can continue this and talk more about that whole story. Yeah.
Right. I think that with the break, we'll break now for our commercial and come back and kind of tie up the Persephone, and I think go to, which is a natural way to go into what we had planned for the second half. So break us away, Nagashiva.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Love it, love it, love it. Okay.
Yeah.
So with the magical genie music, I'm going to turn it back to you, my dear.
All right. Okay, so so I was getting up to where, you know, Persephone knew that she couldn't eat in the underworld if she ever hoped to return to the land of the living. And so she had, I guess, pretty much observed a fast. Hades, her would-be husband, was so kind now, and that she was about to return to her mother, Demeter, that Persephone kind of, some people, well, there's different theories. Some people think that she lost her head for a second, long enough to eat, you know, pomegranate seeds or six. Or maybe she didn't lose her head. Perhaps she had already grown fond of her would-be husband. And so that, you know, it depends. It's one thing I just wanted to bring out, though, is that you know, one of the theories that's been widely adopted in pop culture and comic books, graphic novels, and YA or young adult fiction is that the second version sounds so much prettier than the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it sounds, people who write romance novels, I actually was looking at this very topic in a writer's group, and a lot of the writers were complaining how tired they were of the trope of Persephone and the 50 Shades of Grey, you know, with Hades. And, so we don't really know, but it's said that she had fasted while she was down there until just before she left, and then she ate the pomegranate seeds. And so the eating of the pomegranate seeds, according to a covenant among the gods, was that the consumption of food guaranteed that Persephone would be allowed or forced, however you look at it, to return to the underworld in Hades. And so it was arranged that Persephone would be with her mother, Demeter, for two-thirds of the year, but then would spend the remaining months with her husband. So accepting this compromise, Demeter agreed to let seeds sprout from the earth for all but 3 months of the year. And this is the time that became known as winter, when Demeter's daughter, Persephone, was with Hades. And so spring returned to the earth and would again every year when Persephone returned to her mother. So after all the drama, something else that happened, though, is we see Demeter, and you mentioned her with Triptolemus.
Mm-hmm.
And so to further show her goodwill to man, Demeter gave another of Celeus's sons, not the one she put in the fire, the other one, Triptolemus. And she gave the first grain of corn and lessons in plowing and harvesting. And with this knowledge, then Triptolemus traveled the world spreading Demeter's gift of agriculture. And so a lot of what I did when I was kind of looking at Demeter this time is I tried to look at Demeter through Demeter's eyes, because I think she's kind of taken a back seat in a lot of ways to the astounding Hecate and to also to the very highly interesting Persephone. And but I think that her story really, really resonates for me, like on a lot of different levels. I think my biggest take on Demeter and her story is how underestimated she was, especially like in many of the modern, pop culture retellings or different fictional tropes and stuff like that. She's portrayed as this helicopter mom or, someone who is very intrusive or, but I don't think that that's how the mythology itself really portrayed her. But I think that she mm-hmm. does get forgotten a lot. And I think that she was very powerful. I mean, she had the power to control vegetation, life and death. mm-hmm. And when she was happy, there was a rich harvest. And when she went sad, the earth dried up.
Right.
Yeah. And so, even if you just do a bit of research of Demeter on Wikipedia, we can see that her name has several meanings, like such as portal, bearer, the one that gives grain, the one that maintains order. And we also see that she had connections herself with the underworld and that there was a secret festival performed only by women for her. And So she has a lot of aspects to her, and there's nothing wrong with giving a lot of love to Persephone and her journey. But what I seem to sense is that, or observe, is that Demeter is one of the great Chthonic goddesses of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And, according to research before Persephone went to the underworld, she was the goddess, I think, of flowers, but not of fruits or plants or grains or And she does come to rule the underworld, it seems, with a lot of support of Demeter and Hecate. And, you know, we see that by Demeter's protest, and I think her alliance with Hecate that forces the gods to bring Persephone back. And so I just, you know, wanted to bring that out because I think that if you're only kind of looking at her through a lot of the modern writings, she's not portrayed in the best light. And, you know, and if I really look at the mythology, you know, it seems to me that Persephone did not walk into the underworld. It wasn't like a cutesy abduction, even though in recent times it's been portrayed that way. I mean, she was stolen and violently taken away to the underworld. And I think the, you know, pop culture has a lot to do with the romanticizing of that. And so, you know, I think that, well, as a mom of four adult children, I can relate to Demeter on so many levels. I can also relate to Persephone because I know when I was younger, I moved out when I was 18. I was ready to go. And, you know, I've always been really, really independent, you know, so I get the whole thing with having to come into your own and realize your own identity. But what I also relate to is I think to us moms, but also like any of us older women who have tried to guide or point out something to someone who's younger. And, you know, I'm not talking about being a jerk and giving unwanted advice and stuff like that. I'm talking about scenarios where you can see somebody is headed for disaster and you're covering your eyes, you're trying not to look, but you're like, well, maybe I should say something, you know? And you say, well, you know, I think maybe you should make a different choice. And,
yes.
You know, I think what happens is sometimes, you know, that we're made to feel invisible. Now, I think part of that, now you brought up some things. I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute because you have some very good thoughts about this. But I think that part of that is that, especially, like, my kids are, like, in their 30s and 40s now. And I think there's that time where they really need that separation more so because they are trying to come into their own identity. And so I think that, you know, there's that going on while at the same time, you know, a mother might be worried in trying to say something and then get discounted. And so, yes, both of those things are going on at the same time. But I just want to say for any of the moms out there struggling with this, it gets better. Because I have, like, I adore my kids, you know, and they're all very different personalities. But they, for the most part, something switched. It's like when they started getting into their 30s, mid-30s or so, they started coming to me first. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and so that changed. You know, not always. I mean, they don't always ask for my thoughts or anything like that, but it's like, instead of me just feeling like I'm in the role of being their mom, I'm also a person. And so, you know, I think that that's, you know, a really important thing too, because the mother also has to find their own identity after their child goes on into theirs. And so that's like huge. How about you, Elvira? What are some of your thoughts?
It seems like, you know, when you and I did our planning session, we both had experiences with, you know, I with my single daughter, you with one of your daughters. And it was in such a way that it brought this whole thing out of being, when you become a parent of an adult, be it male or female, there is a difference on how you are expected to treat that individual and how you want to be able to treat that individual, and then how the parent side, who has been there for all this time, is struggling to step back but not be lost. So, you know, when we get that, it's, and that's what Demeter was experiencing in her way. She had a lot of power. She had a lot of responsibility. She, you know, but the first and foremost of the circumstances was her child. And then there is a part of, you know, that, you know, in our world, in the modern world, the fear of the loss of that child through one form or another. I remember being with a friend of mine, and, well, we were actually, the first time this happened was, and when I say first time, it was because we were doing a fair, my husband, her father and I, and she was part of, you know, she was small, she was probably three or four, and she was walking around, and we kept, you know, we kept her in our, we had a castle that we made as our tent light thing, but it was an actual castle. It was amazing as our fair unit. And my ex went out to go and find a place to smoke, and I was trying to keep a hold of her and that, and he was right outside, actually. So she started for him, and I turned around and I couldn't find her, and I, of course, went into hysterics because this is a fair. I mean, there's lots of people all the way around. So I found that she had literally, it's like a homing device. She had found her father. She followed him. She actually followed him. He didn't know she was following him. And then, you know, I'm like, where is she? And then, of course, there she is. And, you know, that immediate terror of the loss of your child. So, you know, in that small space, that was what you can, you know, find in a relation to what Demeter had experienced once the whole thing happened, but in the instantaneousness of what happened. And, you know, the second time was when her friend later about, say, oh, I think it was, she was seven or eight. Oh, my God. Her friend decided, the two of them, they were going to hide. We were, the friend's mother and I, very close, we were in a store, a clothing store, and they decided to hide inside one of those circular clothing racks, and we were both looking at things, turned around, because they were right by our side, and they were gone, and both of us went into, you know, that, and then, of course, then they start giggling, and you're like, oh, my God, you know, so that experience, experiencing that is a reminder of what Demeter felt, but not just for a little bit of time, for a very long period of time. So it was, you know, but that stays with you as a parent, and as they grow up and as they experience life and they become individuals, you know, your parent side of you has to kind of go to the back of the car and sit, so that they can start being who they are. And you have to
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's not get rid of them. It's just they have to take, you know, parent has to take a back seat. And then we as parents, mothers, have to learn a new position. And sort of it's kind of like stepping into eldership without being elder. And I think that, you know, that's why you look at Hecate, or Hecate, as a the elder of the triad of these three women, it is more about stepping into that part of yourself that sits with wisdom for them to come to you for wisdom. And that is what happened, as you have, you know, expressed recently about your daughter. And my daughter has done this as well, which, you know, has a more reasonable, but for the, there's an in-between time, just like tweens, that we call them tweens, between kids and teenagers, that they feel that they're not seeing, is there is an in-between time, a tween time for mothers and for parents. I'm not discounting fathers, because they also have, you know, not only do they deal with, with their daughters, if they have daughters, but they deal with their sons. And so there's still a relationship. But in that tween time, we are felt to be invisible. Now, obviously, we're talking about a goddess, a feminine energy that gets discounted by and abused, you know, raped, abused, while all of this despair is going on. So, you know, we have many levels in this that I can see that are talking about culture, and we're talking about, you know, the environment, and we're talking about our own home life where, you know, I know that, I don't know if this happened to you, but I know that my daughter became daddy's little girl. So in one way, daddy became the person she would go to when she, because she didn't want to go to me, because she's differentiating from me. She's trying to be different than mom. And there's that part of you that feels hurt and and angry. And so all the things that Demeter went through in her loss was also about the separation from that child, even though it was an abduction and all of this. There's still those energy patterns, and even if the child, our modern day aspects of children aren't abducted, the concept is they're abducting themselves actually from the relationship so they can grow. And it's hard,
you know.
No, go ahead. Go on. No.
No, no. I just thought that's really interesting because, I have two daughters, and it's funny because how things change so much. You know, it's just like, well, one daughter lives in a different state, and I did see her recently for her birthday, which was nice. I mean, there was, you know, and it's funny because there's like different phases, like you were talking about. Like when they were kids, I was probably closest to her, but now she's you know, physically distant, and we're not as close. And then with my other daughter, she's the older daughter. She comes over every morning for coffee, and she's. You know, talking to me about, you know, this and that and everything else, like, you know, and she was always kind of like the rebel when she was a kid, always getting into trouble, you know, not wanting any advice or anything. And so it's just interesting that, you know, we all have our different, you know, journeys and different passages for growth and whatever that means, you know, that for each of us. And just to be able to, you know, to hold them, but hold them loose enough that they're able to move to wherever they need to move to.
It's really about, because even when we are for a while, you know, a fair amount of time, and even when that process is. You know, you're there, but when you suddenly become, you know, empty nester is a new version of the conversation. I find it interesting that we do have to create our own, a part of a new life for ourselves to be able to give them the space for them to come, you know, for them to know we are there for them. We love them. We care for them. We're, you know, whatever. And yet to be able to go do things that we are separate and have another part of who we are doing it in the world as, because eventually, you know, the transition comes where, you know, we are either asked because there are children that come into play, like our grandchildren, and then we take on a nurturing aspect to that and help. And then there's a part of it where, you know, depending on what our health is and where life goes, is that they then take on the other side of the coin to make sure they are nurturing and taking care of us, which means we become the elders and they become the parent. And, you know, so there's this back and forth role. So I think with Demeter, looking at her, even as, you know, yes, she's cathartic, and her daughter takes on a cathartic aspect. So, you know, I hate to say this, and I apologize, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I did say that, yes. At least in the myth we're talking about, is that she did take on a part of what her mother actually was and is in that format, just in a variation. And isn't that the truth in most instances, is that even with all the things that happen sooner or later, there are things that we, you know, I have said, I've become my mother, or I said that and that was what my father said, so I've become, you know, we suddenly realize down the road that it isn't necessarily the bad things or the horrible things or the things that we're angry at. It was the other things, the things that suddenly we see the validity in, even when we didn't at the time. So I think this is a good version to revisit. And yes, you know, the concept of the revisioning in the romantic way. And what is the name of that syndrome that, you know, you suddenly fall in love with your perpetrator?
Oh, right. Is it like the Stockholm syndrome or something?
The Stockholm syndrome, yes. You know, and it's kind of interesting that when we're talking about this, that kept rolling around in my head, even though I didn't have the right name for it. It was kind of like, well, he was a savior for me because I was really being, you know, kept as a child and, you know, all of that. And it's kind of like it's part of the desire to be, even though this may not have happened in the actual myth, but in our world, we've created a myth so we can be the hero of our myth in terms of that. So, you know, I mean, we tell ourselves the stories, and I think that's another version. But I think you were going to say something, and I wanted to let you, before we have to close, about how to use Demeter for situations that might be needed, like you were talking
it wasn't anything nothing too elaborate. I was just thinking that Demeter, just knowing her story, and if, you know, I think that anyone who's able to identify with any of the aspects or scenarios that Demeter had to go through on her journey, you know, whether it's maybe because I thought of this right away, because missing child, you know, you know, anytime there's an Amber Alert that goes out, you know, to call, you know, that's the perfect time to call upon Demeter, call upon all three of them, you know, but Demeter, Hecate, and Persephone, but definitely Demeter, because she's the one that, you know, that searched relentlessly and had to really go through a lot of challenges. And, you know, so I think that, you know, and, you know, empty nest syndrome, you know, that sounds like such a, you know, like an airy fairy thing, like, oh, empty nest syndrome. Like a lot of us are probably thinking like, oh yes, I can't wait, you know, but it's a huge change, and it's just, it's not talked about so much, but it is huge, and it's something that can, you know, cause people a lot of distress because they're not ready for it. And they're suddenly they're kind of dumped into this phase of the next development, and they're spinning their wheels and they don't know where they're going. Well, Demeter would be a wonderful, wonderful deity to connect with, you know, to figure that out.
It, you know, or if you're looking, I know I'm going to, because I don't know if you remember some of it, I wrote it down. I thought it was brilliant. If you're looking for resources to help your children, be that, you know, food, you know, schooling, anything that will help your child. And, you know, again, the help is needed to do that. Call upon Demeter, because That's what she was doing when she was trying to, you know, say thank you to these people and help the child become immortal. So it is more than just, you know, when a child is in crisis or a situation around crisis of children, but it's also for help. Like, you know,
I would call Demeter and both Demeter and Hecate have the epithet chorotrophos. I didn't get that out the first time. Chorotrophos. But that means guardian of children. And so call her with that epithet. Chorotrophos.
Good.
Yes.
Well, we definitely need to do our closing. So at this time, we have, you know, next week, we will continue our reaping balance theme for the month with left and right brain, which will be very interesting. And to get in touch with Deb, you can do it through readersandrootworkers.org or hoodoopsychics.com or obviously with three W's in front of it, bewitching.com. And for myself, you can also find me through readersandrootworkers.org, hoodoopsychics.org, www.elvira.com. And the last one is milk, lowercase, M-I-L-K hyphen A-N-D hyphen H-O-N-E-Y.com. And at this point, I think we're at our 2 minutes. So I think we've given pretty much a really good breakdown of Demeter and, you know, some of the things. If there's anything you want to say before we go, I would probably give you about a minute, and then we will let you say, you know, your final closing, and I will just say I turn it over to you to do the closing.
Yeah, I just... you know, I think, I don't know, I think Demeter is also a goddess about order, and she can be fairly fierce. She's not a timid deity at all. And so, I think that, you know, working with any of the, to me, those three are like the best. I am very fond of, you know, Hecate and Persephone and, and now I'm coming to really appreciate Demeter more than ever. And so, so I would really, like, look at her story through her eyes and, you know, ask her to impose order on chaos and ask for her aid, you know, especially when it comes to children.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm going to say see you next time, next week on the radio, and I turn it over to you, Deb, to close.
Oh, that's right. The closing, that's for anybody out there, all of our wonderful magical folks, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
WowVegas.com.
Well,
you're a winner, baby.
Win at WowVegas.com, America's best social casino. With more than 900 free play games at your fingertips. Winners say wow when they play at WowVegas.com. Experience the real thrills of Vegas at home or on the go. Claim your free coins today at WowVegas.com.
WowVegas is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
WowVegas.com.
Well, you're